What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Hindsightless, the sporadic podcast where I talk about life, role-playing games, or whatever else might be running around inside of my head, but mostly role-playing games, even this one. On this one, I'm going to talk about role-playing games.
Hi, Professor Rector. I'm so glad you mentioned to my dad about Wings of Fire. I love them. I'm already partway through number 4. Bye, Professor Rector.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much, little man. That was one of the henchlings calling in to talk about Wings of Fire. I that's so awesome that you love this series. It's an amazing series. Seriously, I know it's for kids, but as an adult, I also fully recommend it. I think they're fantastic. They deal with some very dark themes and some very mature, but meant for kids means, and it's just they're just really, really good. I haven't met a kid that has read them that didn't like them yet, so good on you, my little henchling. That's awesome. Thank you so much for that call. So yeah, that leads us into some book talk. I got some calls about Boromir. We'll talk more about Boromir. We're gonna talk about Boromir because we haven't done that for a while. In fact, confession, I've fallen way off the Lord of the Rings wagon, which is kind of tough to say. Yeah, I need to get back on it. I need to get back on it. Maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow. We'll see how it goes. I need to, but we are going to talk more about Boromir because I have several calls about Boromir that I haven't played yet. Here we go. But before that, let's get into some Wrath of the Righteous talk, because I finally had a game. Okay, so the party was all set for the fight of their lives against the champion Goldurfang. Four-armed, winged incubus, who is the champion of Battle Bliss, one of the many gladiator arenas scattered throughout the Midnight Isles. He was a champion. It was crazy. So yeah, when we last left our heroes, they had signed up for a fight the next day to fight this guy, Goldurfang. And that's where we picked up. We were going to, for the first time in my decade or so years of running Pathfinder, we used the performance combat rules, which I thought worked really well. They were fun. They led to some awesome moments. We'll get more into that. But so for the first part of the session, we went over those rules just sort of in general so the players could get a feel for what they were. And then, yeah, we set out. I had some AI art of Ermagerth, who is, he's the demon that runs Battle Bliss, the big fat demon. I used him as my cover art a few episodes back. And then I also generated some images of the announcers. And I named them, I forget exactly what I named them. Akul and Cap were their first names. Akul Tempestus and Cap Brazahor, or something like that, which was short for something. But basically, they were very, very loose translations from Latin or old Germanic. And basically what they translated to, if you squinted, Akul Tempestus translated to Gorilla Storm, a.k.a. Gorilla Monsoon. And Cap Brazablah, whatever it was, if you flip the names around, translated to Bobby Genius, a.k.a. Bobby the Brain, based on the WWF announcers Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby the Brain Heaton. That was fun for me. I don't know if anyone in the group got it. not really. One thing I will add, though, is that one of the players, the player of Chester, is going to be out for a while. So instead of people trying to figure out how to run his character and then his character possibly dying while he's not there, Chester was just out sick. So Chester didn't participate in the fight. It was just the easiest, most efficient thing to do. But yeah, so we get into the fight, and it was epic. It was epic. Gelderfang, he had an ability where he could just add 20 to his initiative roll, so he goes super first, basically. He flies right up to Subin, the healer. Brah, 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 bop! Unloads on Subin. Does a devastating amount of damage. Probably gets like six attacks on Subin. One of them is a crit, alone doing 50 damage. Would have killed Subin outright, except Haven, in a moment of triumph, comes in with one of her mythic abilities, because Subin was standing smartly, very smartly standing immediately next to Haven. Haven was able to use her sudden block mythic ability, which causes Gelderfang to re-roll one of those hits, the critical she smartly picked. So I had to re-roll that critical. It was still a hit, but it took the 50 damage down to like 17, leaving Subin a total of 16 points left. That's it. He had 16 hit points left, and I was like, "Oh, because Gelderfang knows you kill the healer, the rest of the party is screwed." So he's going for the healer first. He's a smart combatant. He knows what he's doing. So he goes. Next up is Nyx. Nyx the Bard. The Bard. A very downtrodden class in many RPGs. A class that lots of folks say shouldn't exist. They're not good. Why did anyone play a bard? Bard, bard, bard. So the bard goes. The bard goes. And casts, I think it's Soundburst, something like that. Causes a will save where if you pass the save, you take a minuscule amount of damage, something like a D8, something like that. If you fail the save, though, you're stunned for one round. Stunned for one round. And I was like, okay, save? No problem. This Gelderfang saves are really good. He's a champion fighter. He's faced all kinds of shit before. Roll the will save. Rolled a one. Stunned for one round. And before I get into the rest of the fight, I just want to say that right there is why I am so against fudging dice. Had he rolled a two, he could have passed that save and not been stunned and had his whole next turn. And I feel in my heart, if you are willing to fudge rolls as a GM, I think a large percentage of the people who are willing to fudge rolls during combat as a GM would be like, oh, he passed that save. He didn't roll a one. He didn't roll a one there. No way. Because if you're fudging dice, you're showing that you think your idea for what should happen is more important than anything else at the table. You're saying, I know what's best for the table, so I'm just going to say, no, here's what actually happened. And then at that point, why even use dice at all? Just say, that hit you, that missed you, that hit me, that missed me. So yeah, it was just a shining, brilliant example of why I don't fudge dice rolls, because the table erupted. Holy shit! Holy crap, he's stunned for a round. The party gets a whole turn to do everything to him. Haven, our paladin, just unloads on Gelderfang in her two interrupted turns for hitting this guy. Does a total of like something insane with all of her attacks and all their extra damage. The fight lasted 2 rounds. Gelderfang got off 1 round of actions. The very first attack, the very first go. Round one, turn one, Gelderfang goes, blows up the healer, almost kills him, gets stunned, gets killed, boom, over and done. It was epic. And during the fight, it didn't last long, but you can do some performance checks as swift actions if you trigger them by doing, like, for one, if you perform a combat maneuver, that can trigger a performance check as a swift action. If you hit the same target multiple times, that can trigger a performance combat check as a swift action. So we calculated the DC, which is based on the crowd's starting attitude towards the party, which at the start was unfriendly. Then you add some on top of it because it's a large crowd, and you add more to that DC based on the party outnumbering Gelderfang by so much. So their DC to start with was like 24 in order to change the crowd's attitudes. And at one point, Haven, our paladin, is rolling, and she needed to roll at least a 19 in order to pump the crowd up. She rolls a nat 20. At one point, Randor, who barely has, he's got a negative in charisma, he's got no performance skills. He needed, then the DC had been brought down a little bit, but he still needed to roll really high, roll something like a total of a 30, you know, and the crowd is getting pumped up. The crowd's on the party's side now, and it was just awesome. It was really, really fun. But again, had I been like, no, Gelderfang didn't get stunned there and just gone on like I didn't actually roll a one, I don't know, man. I just don't think it would have been, it wouldn't have felt. It's just why I do not fudge dice and why personally I am against it. Again, if you want to do that at your table and people know it at your table, that's cool. I do have a problem, I think. I do, no, I don't even think. If you're fudging dice and not telling your players that you're doing it, that I don't like. I think that's dishonest. If everyone knows, hey, this guy fudges dice, then go for it and everybody's cool with it. But anyway, the fight was cool. At the end of the fight, when Ermagerth, which is such a crazy name, Pathfinder comes up with crazy demon names. He's up on the stage interviewing the party, giving a big speech about how they're champions and they can come back to Battle Bliss and fight there whenever they want, blah, blah, blah. The party starts getting knocked over. They start getting tripped. They're like, what's going on? What's tripping? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Finally, Nyx, the bard, looks around and she spots in the crowd Manago, the faceless demon in the red dress who had kept Yennial as a skin suit for lo these many years. Lo, these many years, she's sitting in the crowd casting spells, telekinesis to be precise, to try and trip the party as they're getting interviewed and try to make them look like fools. And the party finally sees her, sees Manago in the crowd. They call her out. Manago raises up in the air, boom, disappears. Gone, Johnson. So the party decides, okay, let's get out of here. We're going to go to a nice dinner. They go to a nice dinner. They get in. They celebrate. A succubus comes up and asks for their autographs. They figure out that maybe we shouldn't sign anything given to us by a succubus with our real names. So the party all came up with sweet nicknames, which was really fun. And yeah, and then the party goes back to the Absent Father, which is the inn they're staying at. They go to sleep. Nyx and Haven in one room, the boys in another room. In the middle of the night, Haven gets a telepathic message in her head. Wakey, wakey, eggs and bakey. Wakes up, floating well above the bed is this winged, black, almost translucent figure holding a crossbow aimed right at the sleeping Nyx's chest, right at her chest. And this figure says, Manago has hired me to kill you. However, if you pay me 50,000 in gold and/or magic items and meet me at the corner in the docks at this one corner, Umbral and Silversheen, meet me there. Bring me 50,000 in gold and/or magic pieces. Not only will I not kill you all, kill all of you, I'll take you to Manago. I'll take you there. Just pay me what she paid me. I don't give a shit. Otherwise, boom, you're dead. And that's where we ended the session. It was awesome. So the party has 2 weeks. Luckily, all the gear they got off of Gelderfang, I just calculated up. It's worth well over 50 grand. So if they want to give all that up, they can. If they don't want to, they don't have to. You know, it's in their hands. They got a couple weeks to figure out what they're going to do. Yeah, and we'll figure it out from there. It was a fun session just because there were some epic rolls. Some of those performance combat checks were dope because the party's explaining exactly what they're doing, and it was really fun. Some of the just massive hits and damage that was dealt was epic. That Gelderfang roll in a one was totally epic. That's why you don't fudge, because the rolls are as cool as the shit that happens from the players and the GM's minds. The dice play an equal part at the table. I firmly believe that. Anyway, let's get into some book talk. Let's talk about Boromir and Lord of the Rings and awesome stuff, because it was an awesome session. I believe this first call is from Spencer, and he's calling in response to when I talked about. Excuse me. When I talked about in one of my previous episodes about how I've sort of fallen off the wagon of Lord of the Rings because we're doing this alternative reading schedule where we're reading Fellowship of the Ring, or sorry, the Two Towers out of order, but in an order that makes sense chronologically. But because it's out of order, it feels weird to me. And so, yeah, that's what Spencer's calling in about. So, Spence, take it away, dude.
Hey Joe, Spencer here. Just enjoying your latest episode and thanks for the recommend for the CBS Mystery Movie Theatre. It was interesting to me that you are surprised by the fact that there were still radio plays being made in the 70s because radio plays are alive and well over here in the UK. I don't know if you've got access to BBC Sounds, but you know, people are still doing that stuff. And as for reading Lord of the Rings out of order, I mean, you know, if it improves people's reading experience, sure, chop and change how the book's laid out. I mean, you know, this is Tolkien we're talking about, not Gary Gygax. Bye.
Hey Joe, just listen to your episode on Boromir. Some interesting thoughts there from both you and the callers. You know, I think in the idea that the warning is that, you know, most of us would be like Boromir, and that's sort of the cool thing about Aragorn, by contrast, is that Aragorn chooses the wiser path. You also see Faramir say that when he has a chance to when he captures Frodo and Sam and Gollum and learns kind of what's happened. You know, they play it up in the movies like it's this big thing for him, you know, issue for Faramir to, you know, he goes back and forth before he finally makes the right choice. But if I remember correctly, in the books, Faramir just immediately says, "I'm a much wiser man than my brother. I'm going to help you." And you go and do what you're supposed to do, right? How many people would fall into the trap that Boromir does versus how many people like Aragorn who are going to listen to wise people like Gandalf and Galadriel and Elrond and people like that, as well as think seriously for himself. I got to tell you, man, as a person who is an expert in a certain field, who is often called on to either as just with me or to sit even among a group of other informed experts to kind of formulate suggestions time and time again. Hey, this problem you want solved, there's a known solution. We can explain it to you. We can explain why. We can show you the literature. We can come up with a plan. And the vast majority of people just, it goes in one ear and out the other, bounces right off their head. Unfortunately, my experience has been most of the people, when faced with a problem, are going to be Boromir. They're going to want some variation of whatever solutions they're comfortable with or familiar with. They don't want to learn something new. They don't want to look at a different perspective. They want you to explain to them why they're right and help them kind of just reformulate. You know, they don't want to say, "I don't want to go to war." They just want you to give them an alternative battle plan. They don't want to hear the idea that a different solution is better. That's just the way it is, sadly. You know, unfortunately, some people don't. But I think when you try to think of, you know, what percentage of the people act more like Boromir and which one percentage act more like Aragorn, it's far more people that act like Boromir. That's sort of most of the problems we have in the world today, in our society. A lot of them have solutions, but people don't want to hear the solutions because it, you know, it forces them to be something they're not. It forces them to change a fundamental way of looking at the world, you know, to like you said, not make war the solution or whatever their preferred solution is. Which I also think is funny then that you compare Boromir to the 1%, because I would argue that the 1% has a lot to do with with why the world is that way. A lot of times they're the ones who could affect the change because of their status, their power, their money, but they're the ones who don't want things to change. They want to continue with whatever solution has sort of made them powerful. They want another version of that to solve the world's problems. They don't want to just start over and rewrite everything, right? So it's very interesting that you compare Boromir to the 1%, because yeah, as a more of a, you know, Middle Earth, which I think he's sort of represents what we would call more of a Middle Ages style noble. That was their job to fight. That you're right, they had the luxury to train with the best tutors and have the best weapons. A typical medieval nobleman would just, you know, the reason the peasants didn't revolt, I mean, yeah, they probably could take on three or four peasants in a fight, you know, at some point. If maybe not three or four, but the typical nobleman is going to be because they've had better food and access to health care, and they get a day off when they're sick, and they're treated much better than a peasant's. Yeah, and they've been trained to fight from the time they could stand up. That they are going to run roughshod over the rest of the population. So, but when you're born thinking that's the solution to everything, I was born to fight because that's what heroes do, and that's what good men do, and that's what keeps society in order. Of course, your solution is going to be, well, let's just figure out how to make this fight, you know, work to our advantage. Again, we're going to find another fighting solution. So maybe that's not what the 1% does now, fight. Maybe some of them do, but whatever it is that they're all about and what makes their little corner of the world work, that's the solution they're going to permit to come forward. You know, when you say, you guys need to help us, well, I mean, you're the powerful, you're the influential, you're the leaders, you've got to address these problems that we're facing. Yeah, they're going to want a solution that just is a variation of what works for them and not think about whether it works for everybody else. And that includes them just sticking their fingers in their ears and sticking out their tongue and refusing to listen to, you know, people who might know more about a certain topic than them. So anyway, there's my rant about the Boromirs of the world. So hey, everybody, Joe is right. Be less like Boromir. Be more like Aragorn. All right, talk to you later.
Well, there you go. You heard it from a brain doctor, a mind doctor, BJ, the arcane alienist himself. Thank you for putting into coherent, thoughtful words what I was trying to say. I appreciate that. You spelled it out exactly. A lot of people would act more like Boromir and not be willing to listen to the people who know better. And that's why the world is in such a bad place, because there are too many Boromirs in the world that have positions of power. People like Boromir that think everything should be a fight, they're great. They're great when there's war. You don't want them leading the war. You may be leading a smaller contingent, but not being an over general. Maybe being like a sergeant. That's great. Some power, not too much power. Great fighter, can think tactically, but not compassionately. Not in a way that can help the most people. So, yes, thank you for that, BJ. I appreciate it. Now let's hear from Jason, because he's got a different perspective.
Hey, Joe. I'm not going to respond to all the ridiculous stuff you said. Hopefully other people do and talk about bloodlines and Aragorn and Boromir and all that kind of stuff. But I will say that I appreciate your show. I appreciate your putting your opinions out there. I appreciate the discussion. And if anybody's trying to shut you up, I apologize to you for that, and I've got your back. You should be putting out your opinion and generating conversation. I did kind of push back on the book club about talking about Saruman because we're not to the end of the story yet, but we're on your podcast now. We're not on book club. So in the end, the difference is Saruman never repents, right? Even up at the end where he gets shanked in the back in the Shire, he doesn't repent. And also the difference is Saruman actively allied with Sauron. Yes, he planned to try to maybe get the ring and take over and beat Sauron, but he was in an active alliance with Sauron, with the big bad guy. You never see Boromir actively ally with Sauron. So he doesn't repent, and he actively allies with the bad guys. That makes him much worse than Boromir. And with that, peace out.
Also, I forgot to say, just think, what would people think of Boromir in the books if he had taken your course of action and seen, oh, the orcs are going after the Hobbit, Merry and Pippin. I know they don't have the ring, so I'm not going to interfere. I'm just going to stand by and watch him get taken and report that back. We'd think a hell of a lot worse of him if he did that. I also forgot to say thank you to Johnny and Minion for those great calls, and especially Minion for talking about Tolkien's perspective on battles and the way they're presented in the books, because I think it's really poignant. And yeah. So anyway, again, great episode, and I'll talk to you later.
All right. So sadly, you didn't mention what ridiculous things I said, so I can't defend them. But let's start off. So Saruman's evil because he had an alliance with the bad guy in an attempt to beat the bad guy. Does that mean that the U.S. was bad for teaming up with Russia in World War II to beat Germany? Because Russia was the bad guy. We ignored a bunch of their bad stuff to team up with a bad guy to defeat an even worse guy. Saruman teamed up with a bad guy to become the boss, so the bad guy would be gone. Probably still be a bad guy, but I don't, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. Yeah, and I don't know how active the alliance was with Sauron. We see a lot of conversations between the orcs of Saruman and the orcs of Sauron. They don't get along because they know their masters don't get along. Saruman is plotting against Sauron the entire time. And also gets corrupted by desire for the ring, just like that excuse that gets thrown out for Boromir. Why we absolve him of his sins, we can't absolve Saruman. Yes, Saruman doesn't repent at the end because he's been around straight up evil for longer. We have no idea. I mean, again, Boromir's dying words are barely an apology. He mostly apologizes for failing. For failing, not for what he did to cause Frodo to run away, not for trying to steal and possibly kill Frodo, but for failing in his job. Sorry for failing? Okay. Sure, buddy. Failure's okay. Failure can happen. We're more concerned that you totally turned heel and went evil. But okay, apologize for failing. Sure. I agree with you though, Jason, 100%, that if Boromir had let the orcs take Merry and Pippin without a fight, people would have looked down on that at first, maybe, until they realized the orcs were never going to kill them. But Boromir didn't know that, right? I was mostly using meta knowledge because a lot of meta knowledge has been used to talk about how Boromir isn't kind of a bad guy. But yeah, no, that would have been bad. He should not have done that. He died valiantly. Maybe not wisely, but valiantly. I give you that. And like BJ pointed out, that's what he's trained to do his whole life. So he was just doing what he's trained to do his entire life. Hooray. Boromir. Yeah, he's... He's just Boromir. He's the 1% that gets to run everything and thinks they should run everything. His brother, Faramir, who actually shows empathy and compassion and wisdom, he gets shunted aside by his older brother, who is bigger and stronger. Yeah, I'm just not a fan of that 1% alpha male Boromir mentality. And he just drips of it. Boromir just drips of it, man. Boromir would be an Andrew Tate fan. He'd be, those whole alpha male dudes, he'd be right in the mix. And is that a bad thing? I don't know. I don't know, man. I know I do make them mad when I remind people that scream about how they're an alpha male. How if you need to tell people you're an alpha male, you're not an alpha male. That's not how that works, man. But anyway, dude, Jason, as always, thank you for your amazing calls. Thank you for your perspective. It's always a treat. I love it, dude. All right. So let's wrap this episode up with the last message, which is from Spencer. Spencer, what do you got to say this time, buddy?
Hey, Joe. I just wanted to say, awesome, boring mirror episode. Excellent, excellent calls and an amazing response from you. There were a couple of things. Tarantino should have stopped at Pulp Fiction. I'm not sure about that. I mean, as much as I agree that his later work suffers by being far too self-indulgent, and because, as I see it, he's probably surrounded by yes men who won't criticise any of his decisions. I think the pinnacle for me, as far as Tarantino goes, is Jackie Brown. Possibly because I think it's the least Tarantino film. It being an adaptation of Elmore Leonard's Rum Punch, I think, reins him in a little, and the movie is all the better for that. Anyway. Oh, what was the other thing? Oh, yeah. It did amuse me that you were able to reduce class struggle down to saving the ski lodge. But more importantly, if this show is under threat, I tell you what, send me your audio files and I'll put them out, because the show must go on. Take care, man.
Yeah. Nice, dude. So yeah, I just want to run a quick experiment here. I'm going to describe a world and you tell me if that world I'm talking about is AD&D / OD&D or if it's Tolkien's world. It's a world that has rangers, warriors, wizards, hobbits, elves that live in forests mostly, dwarves that live in mountains, hobbits live in cozy holes. There are magic swords, staves, magic rings. There are undead. There are dragons. There are dungeons. There are lycanthropes, all running around together in the same world. What other interesting... Interesting. Also, that's plenty. If you can find another world that has all of those things in it, let me know. Because as you can see, it's what which world was that? Was that Gygax or was that Tolkien? I don't know. But anyway, man, yes, absolutely. I didn't mean to say people shouldn't read the books out of order. Whatever works for folks, that's absolutely cool. It just, to me, it made me feel, like I said, disjointed. I don't know why. Like, I'm a weird, weird dude. I think everyone's pretty aware of that. But as far as radio plays go, I seriously had no idea, dude. I really didn't. I don't listen to BBC radio all that much. I don't listen to U.S. radio at all, really, anymore. And when I did, it was pretty much only FM. So, yeah, I was surprised that even in the 70s, and even more surprised to hear that they're still going on today. In fact, I just listened to one of those episodes the other day that was, it starred, I want to say, like, Morgan Fairchild. Like, somebody famous that I'd heard of before. And I was like, damn, Way to go, Hyman Brown, finding the good people to do the voice acting. Hyman Brown, get out of here. Anyway, I just listened to a radio play today from that channel called I Thought I Saw a Shadow, which was really cool. I really liked it. There are so many Cthulhu scenarios almost every episode I listen to. Some of the episodes are pure crime type stuff, which easy enough, but some of them, the more that have supernatural aspects, are just really cool. What I Thought I Saw a Shadow is the title of it, and I was like, okay, it's gonna be like this, huh? All right. And then it's not like that. It's not what I thought it was gonna be. And I was like, nice, dude, this is awesome. I love this. And there's some weird like jumps to conclusions and everything where you're like, how did that happen? How did they figure that out? Anyway, yeah, the CBS radio, mystery radio channel or something. You can find it on YouTube. Really fun stuff. Again, each episode is under an hour. Yeah, dude, absolutely. Tolkien's for everyone. Read it out of order all day long. But we'll hear more from Spencer later on. Next up, let's hear from who's up? I think it's BJ. I think we're going to talk about Boromir right now with BJ. So, what are you? You're the Arcane Alienist. It took me a second. Arcane Alienist, take it away, dude. Man, I just recorded my whole response to you, Spencer, and it didn't record. So I had a lot of awesome stuff to say. Let's see if I can remember. Tarantino films. I'm pretty sure I've only seen I haven't seen Jackie Brown. I'm pretty sure I've only seen Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, and the first Kill Bill. That's it. I enjoyed all of those. Of those, which one do I like the best? I don't know. I can quote Pulp Fiction the most, but does that mean I like it the best? It might be Kill Bill. I don't know. But yeah, that's enough about Tarantino. Boring Mirror, that's what I named my previous episode about Boromir, because that's how my speech-to-text spells Boromir a lot. It just writes Boring Mirror. And this episode is titled Boromore, and I'm just killing it with these Boromir titles. And then the last thing, I think, you talked about how I reduce class struggle down to protecting the ski chalet. And yes, the ski resort. Yes, goddammit. John Cusack movies are an integral part of my belief system, my universal understanding of humankind are based largely on John Cusack movies from the 80s. I am a child from the 80s, and I love John Cusack movies, man. Say Anything, I love it. In Your Eyes, one of my favorite songs of all time. Back in high school, during football, before football games, we had a stereo system in the locker room, and people would play heavy metal or like hardcore rap, and every now and then I'd get up there, boom, In Your Eyes, dude, let's listen to this before the game and really get fired up, and they get pissed. But I did it anyway, god damn it. And yeah, you know, in Say Anything, John Cusack's love interest, her father owns an assisted living facility, a senior living place, and he's embezzling from it and stealing their money, and it's a big part of the movie. And his daughter finally finds out about it and confronts him, and she's like, you're stealing all their money. And he looks at her and goes, I make their lives better. And for whatever reason, my sister and I would just, he would get so intense, we would just die laughing at that scene. And like all throughout our lives, whenever one of us calls out the other one for something, we'd be like, but I'm making their lives better. And when I first got this job, my new job, where I'm helping seniors find resources and stuff, when I was telling my sister about it, that was one of the first things I ever said to her. And yeah, it was just, it was awesome, man. It cracked me up. So thank you to that. Thank you for that call, Spencer. That's awesome. I'm going to get out of here. Let's do it. You know, after I realized how long this episode was, I thought about maybe breaking it up and putting the Wrath talk in its own episode and the Boromir talk in another one. And then I was like, well, that's what a good podcaster would do, and I'm not a good podcaster. Plus, it would have taken more work and re-recording stuff. Yeah, I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but the trees here in Seattle now are just orgasming like crazy, and there's just a bunch of tree cum in the air, and my allergies are just kicking my ass. It's awesome. But yeah, man, it was a fun episode. Thank you so much to Spencer and Jason and BJ, and especially to the Henchling for your amazing call about Wings of Fire. Yeah, this was a fun episode. It was a fun game of Wrath of the Righteous. But this episode is already running long, and like I said, my allergies are kind of kicking my butt. The last thing I'll say before I sign off is at time of recording tomorrow, I'm going to go donate blood. My sister just did and kind of inspired me, and I was like, dude, I need to do that. Because I recently heard a report that the Red Cross is running critically low on blood. Pretty much since the pandemic, kind of nobody's donating blood anymore. So I'm gonna go donate blood tomorrow. If that inspires anybody else to, that's awesome. It's not something I do a lot, so I'm not up on a high horse here being like, you must donate blood. But, you know, it's something else I'm going to do. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Like I said, this episode's already long enough. You guys are all awesome. You're amazing. Thank you. And, yeah, until next time, peace out.